You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee.
I don't need you to tell me how good my coffee is, okay?
Hello and welcome to A Damn Fine Cup of Culture. Yes, you're hearing right. We're back. After a three-month hiatus, this is the first episode of the year 2020. Things are a bit different, of course, because it's only two of us instead of three. I hope Magger is out there and listening to this, because that's what he promised. But it's also a strange one otherwise. We're in times of social distancing, of coronavirus-caused lockdown, which obviously has an impact on our media consumption. Anyway, I'm here with Julie. Hello, Julie.
Hello.
How's it going? How have you been?
Weirded out, mostly. All of my sort of little plans that I had didn't quite work out, right? You can't go to cinema in lockdown. So I'm feeling a little bit strange, but I'm all right. How about yourself?
It's about the same thing. I mean, really, for the last 2 weeks by now, we've been in almost lockdown, and it feels much longer than that. It's because we're working from home, we're doing everything from home. Days all feel similar, so they all kind of blur into each other, which means I have no idea when it's the weekend. I think today's Friday, right? I very much hope it is, because otherwise I should be working. But it's really been corona, and it's been strange, as you say. We started the year getting a couple's kind of cinema pass for our favorite repertory cinema. So we watched lots of films during, you know, January and February, and then it came to a complete halt, as if we basically ran into a wall. And since then, we've basically, cinemas here are closed. We have to watch stuff at home. They have throttled the bandwidth for streaming. So, you know, we have to watch Netflix in HD rather than Ultra HD. Oh. How horrible is that? Oh. I know. That's not even first world problem. That's first percenter problem. But yeah, concentration is suffering, definitely. But since we're working from home, my wife and I, we basically have lunches together every day, which means we also watch series every day. So we're watching Doctor Who. We're watching Stranger Things Season 3. We're watching Killing Eve Season 2. We're not liking them as much as the previous seasons, but hey, have you been watching anything? Have you been binging on anything? Or is it basically just TV news about infections and curves and flattening those curves?
Well, it's been a little bit strange. Like I said, we're both at home now. So it's this balance between almost pathologically looking for a series that might be fun, that you might enjoy, and also not being really able to deal with any of the really heavy stuff, right? So The Plot Against America, I watched one episode and I was like, oh, Nazis, please no Nazis right now. So it's a little bit of that, you know. On the one hand, you really want to watch lots of stuff to take your mind off of the current situation. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I just feel like anything that's really violent or horrible, I just can't right now. I really can't right now. It's just, stuff is too bad out there. So we binge watched, you can see this in my trailer post, I think, when this is up, something called Tiger King, which I knew from a podcast, which is absurd and shocking and funny and hilarious and terrible and heartbreaking. So it's like stuff like that. It's lots of sort of documentary stuff. And not so much, you know, sitting there watching Bellatar's entire oeuvre, as you say, right?
Binge watching it, exactly.
Binge watching it. So lots of documentaries, but and I'll get into that a little bit later. There's one in particular that I wanted to mention today. But first, let's get started with our subject of the month, 3 months, quarter.
Exactly. I mean, it's a subject that on the one hand would fit the current times very well because we've got so much time on our hands. But because of the aforementioned lack of concentration, it's perhaps not. It's frustrating. You'll see what we're talking about. There's this David Lodge novel called Changing Places, I think. David Lodge writes about these literary circles, academia. And in these circles, the people there have this game called humiliation. And humiliation is where you've got literary critics, scholars coming together and confessing to the big, you know, literary titles, the big names that they have never read. Confession time. I have never read Moby Dick. I've never read Wuthering Heights. This is in quotation marks, by the way. I have read those things. I don't remember a thing. And basically, I thought, how about we talk about not the films and TV series that we have seen, but the things that we haven't seen, or the things that we have avoided, the things that we've kind of looked at and then decided, nah, not for me. So let's perhaps start with that. What are the gaps in your film history, Julie? The gaps that dare not speak their names. What are the films that everyone should have seen, but you haven't? And are they kind of conscious choices, random chance, or something else?
Yeah, when I started, you know, looking into this, I realized how Western-centered my film history really is. I mean, it's kind of shocking. There are these really famous names from Senegalese cinema, Iranian cinema, people from South America. Some of these things I had never even heard about, right? But there are also some things like a film called, and I hope I pronounce this correctly, Adanun by a director named Dragovan, which I was very interested in. But because art house cinemas are having a hard time, I never got to see it. It wasn't there. I couldn't find it. Maybe it was there somewhere in a week where I didn't look. But it's not something that is mainstream. It's not something that's necessarily showing. And art house cinemas are very sort of focused on art house cinema. So some of those types of things are my big hiatus, right? This is some stuff that I really feel I should be catching up with, that I know absolutely nothing about. And these are really big names when you get into film a little bit deeper. How about you? Confess your sins.
Yeah, I have sinned, and so much. I mean, I have different starting points for, you know, different areas of sin. I think one of them, it's something that I've also mentioned, I think on the podcast, definitely on the blog, I have really seen very, very little in the way of silent film. And, you know, the big ones. I've started making up for this a bit, but I've never seen Metropolis. You know, I know the imagery. I know the clips that I've seen. I know the Giorgio Moroder score that, thank God, we don't have to listen to that. But I've never seen the film. I know that there's a manga and anime kind of sequel adaptation. Again, Metropolis itself, I don't know it. I've read about it, but I've never seen it. And it's the same with Battleship Potemkin, for instance. I know the Odessa Steps, right?
Yeah.
That scene that everyone knows, but I mostly know it from parodies. I know it from references. I know it from Brazil, the film, not the country. I know it from The Simpsons. I know it from The Naked Gun.
Yeah.
But the film itself, never seen it. More Naus Nosferatu. It's on my pile. I've not seen it. I will see it soon because we watched, you know, the 70s remake of Nosferatu, and I definitely want to see the original. I'm curious, but by and large, it's one of those things with silent films where I think I should watch this and I kind of want to watch it, but it's an abstract wanting to watch it. It's just not on my radar. There's other big names like, and now not just silent films. I've never seen Frankenstein. I've never seen Bride of Frankenstein. I've never seen The Exorcist.
What?
I've never seen The Exorcist. I've seen, again, parodies. I know what it's about. I know the scenes. I know the quotes. I've not seen the film. But then there's also, you know, some of these art house classics, like, you know, all the Michelangelo Antonioni films, La Ventura, Zabriskie Point, Blow Up. Not seen them. Last year at Marienbad, I've had it for years, not seen it. I also have massive gaps when it comes to certain countries and regions. You mentioned, I'm not sure, did you mention India? There's the Apu trilogy, for instance, by Satyajit Ray. I'm not sure whether I pronounced that correctly.
Yeah.
Probably not. Again, on my pile, not seen it. And I have to admit that I've got this really embarrassing lack of almost all African countries. I've not seen any films. Middle East, I've not seen many films. Asia as a whole, whether it's East Asia or South Asia, I've seen, you know, I've seen Kurosawa, I've seen the stuff that's in the Criterion Collection often. And if I haven't seen it, it's on my pile. But so much I haven't seen, and I have to admit, and this is the biggest sin, I also don't push myself to go and see these things.
Yeah. Some of these that you mention are just also just tough films, right? Marienbad is not something that you take the popcorn and go like, oh, yay, let's watch, you know. This is some tough stuff, I think. And I can understand why you just don't really get around to it. And I have the same thing that you do, is that there are such, I mean, a film like Black Girl, right? Senegalese cinema by Ousmane Sambène. But this is stuff that fascinates me, you know, but I think it's probably the only film that I've sort of seen somewhere at some point and forgotten about. So it's something that you also have to dive into and understand a little bit about what's special about this type of cinema. And I just don't have the background. I really don't. And I'm almost embarrassed about that.
I mean, I think partly it's also, you know, yes, we are probably Eurocentric, Western-centric, ethnocentric, all the centrisms that you can mention. But it is easier for us to, you know, catch a Bergman or a Truffaut or a Fellini, whether it's on TV or whether it's at a repertory cinema. These things come around. They come around relatively often. And if they don't, it's easy to get the DVD and the Blu-ray, or they're on Mubi, whatever. But when it comes to films from other continents, other regions of the world, it is just more difficult unless they get, you know, the big press at Cannes or wherever. There was this film last year, Atlantique, Maggot blogged about it, that got really good press and will probably stream it at some point soon. I'm definitely interested, but I'm interested because, to some extent, because people in Cannes said it was good, because Maggot said it was good, because it was on the radar of other people whose radar is also as limited as mine. But of course, that's also a very easy excuse. You know, I haven't seen, I don't know, much Iranian cinema other than the ones in Cannes because I didn't go looking for it. Same for, you know, you mentioned Senegalese cinema. I couldn't mention a single film. Same for pretty much every African country. And it is difficult, yes, but it's not as difficult as it used to be. It would be easier these days to at least find an entry point. And then the question is, why don't I? Am I lazy? Or am I just, I don't know. What is it? An old white man? White old man?
I think it's middle-aged white men. and sometimes I'm afraid I've inherited some of their particular sins, because I'm the same way. And you can take this as a tip to see Ousmane Sambène, because if it's just Black Girl, it's very evocative.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't know enough to really get into it in any depth at all. Not like I do in ancient Hollywood, for instance.
Yeah. I do think one element of it is, sadly, really, I'm not sure whether racist is the right word. I think it is the centrism. You know, when I was thinking about which countries have I not seen any films of, I realized that in the last half a year or 3-4 months, I've seen, I think, 4 or 5 Icelandic films. How big is Iceland? How many people live there? It's tiny. I've seen more Icelandic films than I have seen Middle Eastern films. Okay, no, I've seen a couple of films from Iran, but still, I've seen more Icelandic films than African films. If you compare, you know, just the number of people, not even just living there, but probably working in the film industry, it's no comparison. Yet, I see a post from an Icelandic film and I'm much more likely to say, yeah, could be interesting. So it is so easy, I think, to just ignore most of the world, which is really sad.
Well, it's privilege, isn't it? That's classic privilege. It's just you look at the world, and that's, you know, that's not a biggie, but you look at the world from your own perspective. Mm-hmm. And I've seen more Danish films than I have seen Egyptian films. And on the other hand, I've seen probably more Korean films than I've, you know. So I think we get to cherry pick, and we are, at least I'm an absolute amateur. So I get to cherry pick and find what I like and watch that, and don't go into it in a very sort of systematic way, which just makes gaps. It's as simple as that. And sometimes I just don't know of them until I see some sort of nice film documentary, or Mark Kermode says something clever and I start watching Refifi all over again. Sometimes I just forget about them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's classic sort of privileged that, you know, you get to cherry pick what stuff suits you rather than looking up some more challenging stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I think probably people like us were in this situation where it's even easier to kind of be comfortably privileged, because I don't know what it's like with you. When I talk to my friends at work about films, most of them think, wow, Matt watches everything. And that's not true. As I've just said, it's not true. But, you know, they are not likely to watch the directors in the Criterion Collection, which is also perfectly okay. But it makes me think, wow, I know so much about film compared to them. And that's rubbish. I mean, it's partly true, but it's also rubbish because my gaps are different ones, but they are just as big.
Sure. Sure. And it's easy to sniff your nose at people who watch, I don't know, soap series and go like, oh, that's not very cultural, but I'm doing totally doing the same thing and geeking out about the next big Korean franchise. I mean, you know, it's just a different kind of entertainment, but it's entertainment, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
no, absolutely.
It's not systematic or scholarly at all.
But I'm still curious. I mean, as I said, I don't want to, I definitely don't think that, you know, how should I say this? You know, just because I've seen perhaps more French Nouvelle Vague doesn't mean that I know more about, you know, culture than the people at work who don't. But I'm just wondering, I mean, you, for instance, you watch silent films. I could imagine that you probably have many friends who don't so much, or perhaps you do, and you're really lucky, I don't know. So how did you come to watch those things that you've seen that for other people would be gaps? How did you come to see silent films? How did you come to see whatever other obscure-ish films you've seen?
Oh, I had my gateway drugs, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I hope some of our readers have also picked up on that. I write some articles for the blog every once in a while, and I do a lot of sort of classic Hollywood-y stuff. But I came to that relatively late in my film life. So I think you get into it because it's being referenced so often. You get into it because you wonder how Tim Burton's Beetlejuice gets these weird angles, right? Mm-hmm. And you come to this idea that there is this film called The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. And you think, oh, that's interesting. Then you leave it for a year. And then at some point, something clicks and you either find the DVD or you find there is this catalyst that you go like, okay, I'm going to sit down and watch it. Please don't get me wrong. Dr. Caligari is not a typical silent film, right? But this is what was one of my gateways. And the more you see them, the better you start to understand them. You know how much patience they might take, you know, just about, you know, what the feel is of some of them. And it gets easier and easier and easier. And then you go and find something by a director that you're interested in, and you're like, oh, that's fascinating. You buy a collection, you watch some stuff that nobody's ever heard of or seen except film students. It's a little bit messy because there's no system. Again, it's pure cherry picking. But for a good example is I follow Movie Silently, who is a silent movie reviewer on Twitter, pretty big. And she had a little podcast about Douglas Fairbanks. And then I thought, oh, neat. And I'd seen some of his films, A Thief of Baghdad. And I went on a Douglas Fairbanks binge because they're fun. And I'm sort of more used to them, and they are easy for me to watch. But my partner, for instance, he hardly ever watches them with me. It's like, okay, it's your silent movie night, dude. I'm going upstairs and watching whatever. So that's basically the way I got into them. And with so many subjects, the more you know, the more you see, the more you read, the more interesting it becomes. So you just get drawn in. But I will admit that I came to that pretty late. I mean, I wasn't binging on All About Eve in my teens. I wasn't crying at Casablanca when I was 14. I thought it was slow. You know? So it takes a little bit of knowledge and it takes a little bit of sophistication, but then they're great fun, and some of them are howlingly funny and very modern feeling, and some of them are just strange, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's the way you get into subjects like that. So I would encourage everyone, just start somewhere, grab one and give it a go, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that your point about the gateway drug and about having to learn these idioms, filmic idioms, is an extremely important one in that respect. as you say, you know, probably the first, even just black and white film that many people watch, it's weird. The first film before 1950 is, it's going to have different rhythms. It's going to have different conventions. And these conventions, it's easy to forget that the films we watch these days are filled with conventions that would be weird for people 10, 20 years ago and probably 20 years down the line. And if you don't know the conventions, I mean, ideally, they can come across as weird but interesting. But very often they come across as weird and obscure, I think. And in that respect, it's a bit like food. You know, if you don't try something, you never know whether you like it. But you might try something the first couple of times and not like it, but come to enjoy it a hell of a lot. It's also a bit like with Shakespeare. If someone's first experience of Shakespeare is reading the words on a page, chances are they're going to come away from it hating it with a vengeance. If their first experience is, let's say, a good production, or if their first experience of Shakespeare is Much Ado About Nothing, the film by Kenneth Branagh, something that's alive, that kind of sparkles, and where in a way the conventions, the styles, the language, the idiom are mitigated by performance, by charm, whatever, that can help so much. And in that respect, I think it's, you know, with some of these, let's say, film noir movies or some of those screwball comedies, it does, in a way, it makes it easier if you start with the ones that are acknowledged to be the best, because very often they're also the easiest to get into.
Sure.
And then by doing that, I guess you can learn the idiom. One thing that's definitely shaped my own viewing habits is I grew up in the basically 80s. We had, as a family, we mostly had television as a thing that we did together. We watched some series, but we especially watched films. And films at the time, of course, they showed some of the newer ones, but the newer ones that meant, you know, late 70s, early 80s at the time. So what they showed a lot of was black and white films, the Billy Wilders, the Frank Capras, the Alfred Hitchcocks. And of course, those are great, great, great gateway drugs for just black and white cinema.
Yeah, certainly. And also, this is important to note, people talk about silence or pre-code or women's film or whatever genre you want to stick on it, like it's one thing, but it's not really. If you've seen a silent and you didn't like it, there are tons of genres. You have Russian films, you have French films, you have American films, you have adventure films, you have swashbuckling films. Don't give up after one because you think, okay, this is not for me. And the same, I think, goes for pre-code. If you did not like Bombshell because you thought it was way too hectic and hysterical, try another one. It's fine. They're different. It's you know, and this is something I think that we also do as podcasters and amateur writers, is that we tend to make it one blob. I do this. I said, okay, this is another pre-code film, as if Trouble in Paradise is like equal to The Divorcée or something. It's not. Mm-hmm. They are very, very, very different. So if you're interested, don't be dissuaded so easily. Leave it for a couple of months. Try another one if you don't like it. Put it to one side. There's a lot of free stuff out there. You don't have to pay for all of it. There are a lot of resources where you can watch this stuff for free. If you don't like it, click stop. Walk away. Try another one next month. You know, that's sort of my thing.
No, absolutely. There's also other gaps that we haven't talked about yet. The ones that we, you know, let's say we tried something, and as you said, we might have after 10 minutes decided, no. Perhaps we were too stubborn to press stop because we thought, you know, everyone says this is really great. We have to love it. And if we don't, there's something wrong with us. But let's perhaps talk about these kind of gaps. Do you have, I don't know, any of the big names, directors, genres, styles that everyone says, you know, you have to watch this, it's the best ever, and it doesn't work for you?
Yeah, I hate J.W. Griffith. I just can't. And he's supposed to be like the best ever American filmmaker. And I know, but it's so racist and gross and megalomaniac. And then he made this other enormous film, forget the name, where he basically just attacks film criticism for daring to not like him at all. Oh, God. And he says he invented the close-up. He obviously did not invent the close-up. It's just, he, I can't. This is controversial in a sense that some people will defend him to the death. This is the hill that they want to die on, that J.W. Griffith is like, great, 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 great. Mm-hmm. But this is something that I'm just like disgusted by.
Yeah.
And I don't even mean, oh, well, it's just the times, because mm-hmm. it's not, and it wasn't then, and there were protests then, and people were very angry, rightly so. Back then, just not true. None of it is true. He was a total creep. He liked these virginal girl women. It's just gross. I just cannot do it. And the second one that came immediately to my mind, and I'm a little bit more embarrassed about that, is that I cannot do Leni Riefenstahl. I can't do it. I don't care which one of her films, if it's the Magic Mountain. At some point, I'm just, oh my God. Goodness, I really, 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 really cannot do this. To the extent that there was this, the Horrible, Wonderful Life of Leni Riefenstahl, this documentary about her, which I wanted to see because I was interested.
Yeah.
And even that, I was just clenching my jaws and going like, oh my God, you know. So, and that's not fair of me, because that's just the connotation. That's just the Nazi filmmaking, and it's not, you know, anything else, but that disturbs me to such an extent that I can barely, barely, barely get through her work at all. And that's not like J.W. Griffith, because I really don't like him. It's mm-hmm. more of something that's in my gut feeling, that I'm like, this is goes against everything that I hold dear.
I think that's legitimate, though. I mean, it's a difficult one, because at uni, when I was doing literature, we basically were of the school of, you know, the author is dead, so you look at the work, which is, of course, extremely limited in many ways, and the author is all over the work in many cases. So, you know, with Leni Riefenstahl, it doesn't mean that every frame of every film basically screams fascism and Nazism, but the ideologies that she espoused will be there. And it's not just ideologies. It's also, you know, there's people who say that they will not watch another Polanski film. And I think that's totally legitimate either. I couldn't do it because I absolutely love Chinatown. And I hope that I can say, you know, I can love Chinatown and still think Polanski is an utter creep. But I understand the people. And in some ways, I respect and almost admire the people who say, no, they don't want the adoration and money to flow in the direction of Polanski. They're not going to watch even the good films. It's not something I can do. It's not something, you know, it's something that I justify for myself, but I think it's totally valid to say, no, sorry, I don't want to let that creep into my headspace.
Yeah, it's that, but it's also for me, and this is personal, right? Everybody makes their own call on this type of thing. It's how much the creep goes into their work. There are mm-hmm. people that you read about, and you find out that they are just scary people, and you can see it in their films ever after. Mm-hmm. And there are people with whom that is not so much the case. And I think with Riefenstahl, it's the eugenics. They're everywhere, mm-hmm. and I can't do it. With Griffith, it's the creep. He's everywhere. And the racism, and it's everywhere, and I can't do it. But I can imagine it being different for a film like, what is it, Two Men in a Wardrobe by Polanski, which is very early, mm-hmm. which I can dissociate from his general creepiness. yeah, well, it's a hard subject, and I think everybody has an absolute right to make their own call. Mm-hmm. But there is a difference between whether or not you can see the creep through the film or not, I think, whether you can separate the material from its author.
What about filmmakers that are not creeps, or you don't know whether they're creeps, they're supposedly the great ones, but you still have come to the conclusion that they're just not for you? Have you got anyone like that?
Well, yeah, I do. I don't like American sentimentalism much. Mm-hmm. So something like Good Will Hunting will not be for me. Mm-hmm. I despise almost all rom-coms, even if they're good, right? Rom-coms are not for me. Having said that, I'm, you know, dithering a bit, because there are exceptions. I love Arsenic and Old Lace. I mean, what is that? Is that not a rom-com?
It's a bit of a grim-com, isn't it?
A grim-com. I love Adam's Rib. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't that a rom-com?
Yeah.
So there are absolutely exceptions to every rule. It would have to be specific films that everybody says that are always in the top 100 on IMDb,
mm-hmm.
like The Shawshank Redemption, where I go, you know, I don't know. No, not really. But generally, I try to give most things a chance, even if they're difficult or even if they're not intuitive. And some things are just hard. I mean, we discussed in the intro, we said last year at Marienbad, this is a hard, hard, hard film. I mean, if you want to see it, go see it. But it's a toughie. I mean, not everything is made for you. Not everything is entertainment. And I think it's okay to say, I appreciate this film very much, but it's just a tough, tough, tough watch. I think that's okay too.
Yeah. I think I'm more comfortable with films that are supposedly amazing that I don't enjoy but appreciate. But there's some that I just completely find myself on a different wavelength. And I think so far I found that all of Godard that I've seen is very much like that. I mean, Jean-Luc Godard, I remember when we watched Breathless for the first time. The trailer was on the DVD. I watched the trailer and I thought, this is cool, this is funky, this is jazzy. And then I watched the film and I hated it.
Yeah.
Hate is perhaps too strong a word, but I found it grating. I bounced off it. And with all of the Godard films I've seen, they grate so much that I find it very difficult to even appreciate all the things that he's obviously done. And that I find irritating, you know. I can watch individual scenes from Band of Outsiders. I mean, there's the wonderful dance scene. I love that scene. If the film had just been that scene, those 3 minutes, and nothing else, I would have come away saying, my favorite film ever. But then there's an entire film around it, and I just dislike it. Even looking at, what's her name? Anna Karina, right?
Yeah.
Even kind of getting lost in her eyes is not enough to make me enjoy that film. There was some interesting stuff in Alphaville, but on the whole, and yes, I can absolutely say perhaps Godard isn't for me, but there's a part of me that doesn't like doing that. There's a part of me that thinks everyone says he's so fantastic and he is probably fantastic. I should be able to at least appreciate that. And I try again. I've got a collection of his films on my bookshelf. Every now and then my hand goes towards it slowly and then it shies away again because I'm sure that it's going to be the same thing again. I'm going to watch it, but no, I'll bounce off it.
Just a quick ad lib just came to me. Do you ever have that the other way around? I have a couple of films that I watch and I come back to them after about 2 years. And in my memory, this is such a wonderful film. But then you watch it again, you're like, this is actually just 3 bits that are really great that I keep remembering. But the film is like 2.5 hours or 3 and it goes on forever. And it's really not that praiseworthy. And then after 2 years, you're like, oh, you know what? Let me watch that one again. You go through the entire same thing. I have that with Now Voyager, full disclosure. But do you have one like that?
None that I remember consciously now, because I think I also used to rewatch films much more when I had more time, you know, in the olden days. And what would happen is that I'd watch a film 4 or 5 times, and then by the 5th time, I'll think, yeah, it was okay, but I've seen it enough now. I think I've probably kind of had that with the Lord of the Rings films that I really, really enjoyed for a long time. But by now, having seen the regular versions and the extended versions several times with and without commentary track, I think I need a break from them. I think what I have sometimes is films that I really enjoy in a mood in a certain moment. And I kind of sense that if I rewatched them a couple of years later, I would not like them as much. I had this thing where I spent a couple of months in Scotland for my studies. And during that time, I watched lots of stuff that I wouldn't otherwise have seen simply because of what they showed at the Glasgow Film Theatre. And there was some stuff there where I thought, this is really cool. Came back home, decided to show these films to my friends. We watched them. And while I was sitting there, I realized they don't like them all that much. And it's not the same for me anyway, because I'm no longer in that situation in Scotland. It's no longer this exceptional thing. Because of that, I've kind of decided if I feel that I might not like a film as much the second time around, if there's even a hint of that in my gut, I'll stay away from it.
Yeah, I concur.
Yeah, I think when it comes to films, I tend to trust my gut. But again, that takes us back to the privilege. My gut is a privileged gut and it steers me away from lots of fantastic cinema that I haven't even started to think about. So let's perhaps take that to, you know, bring the conversation to some kind of conclusion that, you know, isn't just, yeah, we've seen this, we haven't seen that, we didn't like that. Do we have any resolutions for the rest of 2020? Are there any gaps that we resolve to fill over the next couple of months? Do you have any homework for me? Do I have any homework for you?
Homework for you is watch The Exorcist.
Okay.
No, this is a nice, I think it's a nice idea. There is this wonderful film documentary by a man named Mark Cousins, and it's called The Story of Film, An Odyssey.
Yep.
And it's this sprawling bird's eye view of non-Hollywood cinema, the breaking of the Hollywood machine, etc., and so on and so forth. And he names quite a lot of films which appeal to me, and that is especially so Hong Kong cinema of the 50s and 60s, and especially those with Lin Dai. I really have to get my hands on those. That is one of my resolutions. And some of the films that he names in there, so there is Ridwik Ghatak, which I should be seeing, Samben Moore, Ma Betty, well, etc. and so on and so forth. But that documentary series for anybody who is, you know, jonesing would be a very nice entry into a different view on cinema than we know, which is obviously American, Euro, white cinema. So that would be my entry point. It's a lot of movies, so I won't watch them all, but I'm going to try and take his lead to fill some of the gaps.
Okay, no, I'll definitely have to check that one out. My homework for you otherwise would be, if you want to, we talked about this just before we started recording, so this is a bit of a reference that's perhaps missing for our listeners, but you mentioned that Bergman isn't really someone that you got into all that much because I'm not sure how you put it, whether he's not for you or you bounced off him. But I would suggest to you watch Smiles of a Summer's Night, which actually fits with some of what you said, because you said you don't like rom-com. And Smiles of a Summer's Night is definitely Bergman doing rom-com and doing it really well and doing it really wittily and doing it. It's basically the kind of film that I fell in love with, and I don't like rom-coms either. So perhaps towards the end of the year, we can get back together and talk about which gaps have we filled this year and which gaps are still there and shame ourselves into filling some more of those gaps in 2021. What do you think?
I think we don't even have to shame ourselves. I think it's going to be lots and lots of fun and very educational.
That's also a good way of looking at it, yes.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. So this has basically been it for the first episode of A Damn Fine Cup of Culture after the break. Perhaps a quick outlook on what's going to happen for the rest of the year, because we're now just two regulars podcasting about film, TV, culture, possibly coffee. But we definitely don't want it to just be the two of us. So over the next couple of months, we're planning to bring in some guests who bring in topics of their own, films, TV, anything really. So you will be hearing different voices from different parts of the world. Hopefully they will introduce us to new, weird, interesting stuff or reintroduce us to things that we had perhaps forgotten about. We will return to our monthly rhythm, and we are very much looking forward to sharing all of our damn fine cups of culture with you. So thank you very much, Julie. And thank you very much, listeners. It's been fun doing this again, and we're looking forward to doing it again every month from now on. Goodbye.
Bye.